Welcome to Solutions OP Clinical Trials Podcast. My name is Olga and I'm the Managing Director of Solutions OP. We are a small team of experienced professionals working on clinical trials in the United Kingdom. I'll use our podcast to discuss hot topics in clinical trials and provide analysis of the latest trends and challenges in pharma and medical device industries, not just in the UK, but globally. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. In today's episode, I am planning to discuss the latest scandal or also what went wrong with Eisai and Eli Lilly Alzheimer's clinical trials. There's been a lot in the news about the clinical trials, and I want to have a bit of a more in-depth analysis of what happened and what could have been done to prevent this, and hopefully what we can do in the future to prevent things like that happening. But let's go back to the beginning and what drugs were involved in this scandal. So the scandal concerns two drugs, Leqembi, which is manufactured by Eisai, and Kisunla, which is manufactured by Eli Lilly. So both drugs are for treatment of Alzheimer's, and they have known side effects of brain bleeding or brain swelling. It's also well known that some patients have a genetic predisposition to experience such a brain injury. So what happened is there were two clinical trials which recruited more than 560 patients. In the Eisai clinical trial, they have 274 patients, and the Eli Lilly clinical trial had 289 patients. And unfortunately, the tragic result was that two patients died in the Eisai clinical trial, and more than 100 have experienced different level of brain injury. And when we say brain injury here, we mean brain bleeding or swelling. And similarly, in the Eli Lilly study, they had also a lot of patients who had some different level of brain bleeding. So for some was more mild, for others more severe. So let's go back into discussing a little bit the genetic risk and why this thing happened. So the patients who are at high risk of developing Alzheimer's or other dementia, they have a gene called APOE4. So for those patients who have two copies of this gene, they have 60% chance of developing Alzheimer's by the age of 85. So as you can imagine, this is quite a significant risk. And about 25% of the general population has one copy of the gene, and about 2-3% of the patients have two copies of the gene. So that means that these people are at a higher risk of Alzheimer's. But not just that, it also means that they have increased risk of bleeding, brain bleeding and swelling, if they use the drugs Leqembi and Kisunla. So here's of course the question. The question is: did the companies inform the patients about these risks and what actually happened? The companies, of course, they have informed the patients of the risks. I mean, it's a well-known risk. And also, as part of their clinical trials, they have conducted genetic testing to see which patients have these genes. However, what they did not do is they did not disclose to the patients their testing from the genetic results. So basically, the patients did not have the information if they have this gene that could increase the risk of brain injury. And that's actually the controversial part in the whole situation. The companies took a different approach. They decided to treat everyone participating in their clinical trial as if they're high risk. And that was because the study was blinded. And so basically patients were taking either placebo or the study drug. So they didn't know what drug they were taking. So they decided to just blankly treat everyone as their high risk. So part of the explanation from Eli Lilly was that they didn't want to disclose that information to the patient simply because in previous research, it's shown that when patients know about their gene genetic predisposure, they tend to perform worse on memory tests. However, I don't personally think this is necessarily a very strong argument, considering that in this study you have placebo face. So patients don't know if they're taking the study drug or placebo anyway. So I think in this particular case, they could have benefited from knowing that information. And I think it's really relevant and important for them to know, even if it's not because of the clinical trial, but in general for them to know that information and the possibility of having Alzheimer that is a lot higher than any other patients. So some of you might think, well, why didn't they just exclude everyone who is at risk? And probably that would make sense. Why would they just not exclude these patients? But the reality is it's very tricky when you have a new drug, which you don't know how it works exactly. You don't know who has more benefit than the other. So the risk here is that you can exclude patients that could potentially benefit from the treatment, and they might not necessarily have that brain injury. And even though they have the increased chance of such brain injury, they might have benefit and they might not have this brain injury at the end of the day. So it's really tricky, and I can understand why the companies were reluctant to exclude these patients, because they don't want to exclude someone who might benefit basically from the treatment. But here I want to discuss another perspective of the case, and it's more from the point of view of the ethics committee, because as a member of the ethics committee, we review a lot of studies, and it's quite common to see genetic testing for some genetic diseases. And it's absolutely standard practice for ethics committees to ask the researchers and the companies that if there is any relevant information, this is disclosed to the patients. As you know, anything that is discovered as part of their genetic testing. However, we see a lot of pushback on this. Part of the reason is sometimes companies say, well, we don't expect to have any special information that might be of benefit for the patient, so we can't argue on this one. But sometimes they say, well, it's logistically not possible because we have blinded samples which are sent to a central lab, which is not necessarily part of the company, it could be a third-party provider. So if for them, it could be a bit more of a complication to have that information and send it back to the patients. But I think in this particular case, I think that the correct thing would have been that these results are provided to the patients. And I'll explain why. The reality is, of course, we inform patients of risks about clinical trial drugs and medical devices in the informed consent. And often it's a really lengthy document, sometimes 23, 24 pages, and you have all these risks listed there. And of course, patients look into them, that's all discussed with the physician, but how much they really remember and how much they really pay attention to, it's completely, you know, different story. And it's a human nature to undermine such precautions unless they directly affect us. So we tell them, oh, there is a chance of like 2% of developing whatever. And they'll think, wow, 2%, that's very low. Of course, not going to happen to me. So that's the natural way of people think about
these risks that we try to prevent them, things preventing from happening to them. I think this is why in this case it was really important that they've been informed from the very beginning of this genetic result, because then we don't just have the physicians looking for potential symptoms for brain injury, but we would have the patients and their families a lot more vigilant. And maybe, I'm not saying it would happen, but maybe they would be able to pick something earlier, to react earlier and get treatment earlier, and maybe something could have been prevented. So I think from this point, what we learned from this case was that there are some cases where we really need to think if we have to inform patients about their genetic information, which is relevant for their future treatment and their overall disease. And the other thing I wanted to say is we have in this particular study vulnerable patients. So they don't necessarily have any advanced stage of Alzheimer's. But of course, they have some symptoms of Alzheimer's. So I think it was even more critical that their family were aware of this risk that they have because of their genetic predisposition. And this could have made a difference, and definitely it could have reduced probably the amount of adverse events which were observed in the clinical trials. So it's a very important lesson for everyone in the industry that sometimes things are not just black and white and not just logistic. And it's very important if there is any relevant information that we identify during genetic testing that we inform the patients and their families and allow them to make the decisions. I don't think that necessarily means that patients will decide not to participate. Some of them might still be interested to participate. But at the end of the day, it's their decision and they need to know that information to make that decision. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have another interesting topic for you for the next podcast.